Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on a Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke. And you can tap the line, Schillingbridge Cork and Tap House, 466-377-6800-825-5865. Apologies there, Danny. Had my headphones turned down. But I saw you starting to dance, so that's what we did. We'll take some calls here and get rolling. Plenty to get into. Lots of NCAA rules to go over. Two important ones with the red shirt, with the transfer. We'll get on it. More on the black shirt discussion from yesterday into today. And we'll get caught up with Derek Peterson of HailVarsity.com and magazine. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. We'll catch up with Shuey via the phone to get his take on the U.S. Open that gets rolling tomorrow. And in hour two, Barry Alvarez, Wisconsin athletic director, former Husker standout linebacker, great coach at Wisconsin. 1 hour from now, Barry Alvarez. Can find us on Twitter at Danny Burke 5, at Schmidt underscore radio, at Hail Varsity, and can email Chris at HailVarsity.com. Well, the news today, the rules today are a little bit different, and it is in reference to the redshirt situation. Let's start there. The NCAA deciding that freshmen can play in up to four games before they are burning their redshirt. Scott Frost's reaction to the Journal Star and World Herald, really good, helps with roster size, paraphrasing, and when it comes to the end of the year and you're playing in meaningful games, you can put a kid in there. The question now becomes, when do you experiment? When do you turn to a kid and say, okay, here is what's up. Get in there and give him hell, Johnny. Game one against Ohio State, Wisconsin, how are they progressing during practice? What jumps are they making? Are they ready for the moment? Or do you kind of hang on to those four games to the end of the year when teams are tired, when teams are beat up, when teams are, I think Nebraska's bye week is week 12, so that's good. But generally, it doesn't always happen that way. I mean, there could be a lot of wall hitting at that point in the year, the final four-game stretch, and a lot of times it's a stackable, oh my God, finish to the end of the Big Ten. You know how it's been with Nebraska and Iowa. So, you know what? The NCAA has done some really stupid things with enforcement. They've done some really questionable things, as in they're trying to win you back as a fan. Listen, this is good. This is compromise when it comes to, okay, we're going to give you a chance to have a feel-out process with the kid, and it's more fair to the kid and the university when it comes to playing time, ability to contribute, and whether or not the Harrison Beck situation where the kid burns his red shirt the second-to-last game of the year because Zach Taylor gets knocked out, go in there and go get him. That's one instance I remember. You don't want to burn a kid's shirt super late into the year. So this is good for the NCAA. I think it works well. I think the incoming kids, the early enrollees, obviously are committed and want to play football right away, want to get a jump start on an offense or a defensive scheme. But kids that maybe show up a little bit later but progress or are super talented, and coaches see that, some guys are more ready than others. Some guys, it takes 2 or 3 years in a system. They need a redshirt. That's okay. But you have four games to determine and use selectively. It'll just be up to the coaches to manage that appropriately and make the right call when to use guys. And then that step further, if the kid's playing at a high level and you can use his help at corner, let's say, from a position of depth standpoint, go ahead and decide to burn it. You'll know, or maybe you have 12 regular season games, maybe every third game. There's a lot of juggling, but you can kind of tell it's a nice option to have.
Yeah, I like this move a lot. I think it's going to be beneficial to a lot of teams. And like you mentioned, this really gives the coaches a chance to see if these players are going to be ready or not. You can only see so much in practice, and the players are only going to maybe not as much give you so much, but know how to react in real time, and you'll be able to tell in these real games. So I think it's only going to be beneficial for every team out there, and it will be interesting to see how teams kind of, you know, play around and use their strategy with these players to put them in certain games. And I think you might see, I don't know, actually, I guess that's the question. Do you wait till the end of the season where more players could be injured, or do you go earlier in the year so you can give them more playing time against those non-conference teams where the competition might not be as fierce?
Get their feet wet a little bit early on in the year, at least maybe the first couple of games traditionally. But you can also see how guys progress throughout the year, and then you have some extra weapons, some added talent, some added depth in the bowl game. Because the bowl games, it's important who wants to be there, yes, but when it comes to springboard and maybe some energy, maybe some momentum, winning the bowl game never sucks. And to be able to go into a bowl game with a guy who's seen action in three games, different parts of the year. Maybe he's a second teamer. Maybe he's been out there in some big moments, some late game moments. Or maybe he's just been a killer for you on special teams. To have that option in the bowl game's huge. I really like that. Think about it this way for Nebraska football. It hits home here because of what you got at the quarterback situation. This is case in point for Nebraska with Adrian Martinez. The question is with the quarterback spot, okay, you're a long ways off. That from Coach Mario Verduzco earlier with the Husker Nation tour. They haven't decided. They don't know where they're going to go. What do you do at quarterback? You have Tristan Jebbia. You have Adrian Martinez. And now with this rule, you're going to get to see Adrian Martinez in action this season without burning a red shirt. Adrian's also coming off an injury. Adrian's also, from a body type standpoint, pretty impressive for just being a true freshman. He's an early enrollee. He's a pretty serious guy. So you're going to be able to see Adrian in some situations, likely against Akron, I would think. You're going to see Adrian in some situations, maybe against Colorado. That's your top non-conference opponent. And maybe you see Adrian in action at Michigan if things are sputtering without fear of burning the red shirt, and it might make it a real easy decision if a quarterback is struggling to go with the freshman. He does well, and there you go. You have another game to kind of see prove it from a quarterback spot. This will be good for so many players, and I think it'll also help from a transfer standpoint too. If guys know they can keep working, get in, get some games under their belt. It's all for naught practicing, going through it, doing scout team without actually seeing the field because you're being, air quote, redshirted.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, too. I think it really keeps up the motivation for these players knowing they're actually going to get on the field and get some playing time versus just lugging around kind of in practice and whatnot. And I want to ask you, do you think that this will alter the decision of who's going to be starting quarterback then for Nebraska? Do you think it's going to make that big of an impact, or do you think that's not really going to play into much of a factor determining who's a starter between Martinez and Jebbia?
You're asking the million-dollar question here on who do I think is the quarterback, and it comes down to short-term versus long-term. Mm-hmm. What's the answer been at quarterback for Nebraska? What's the answer been given? Well, for the graduate transfer example, let's try and get by with what we got in the room. They like what they have in the room. There wasn't a need to go get an extra quarterback. They got a McCaffrey, by the way, coming in for 19. They've got Noah that is sitting out due to transfer. We'll get to that transfer rule here in a minute as well. And then you have Bunch as an option. And then, oh yeah, Tristan Jebbia and Martinez are both the guys that are your one and two there? Who's the one? Who's the two? In this offense, it's extremely important to be able to use your feet, use them well, use it effectively, put that type of fear, stress, and pressure on a defense. It's not that Jebbia can't. There's just a difference with running the football. Adrian's a much better runner, at least through the spring game. Jebbia is very, very capable. He's functional. Adrian, when push comes to shove, is a much, much better runner. From a throwing standpoint, Jebbia is a better passer right now. You still have summertime to become a better runner if you're Jebbia. You still have summertime to become a better passer if you're Adrian. So I don't know who the starter is going to be. If I were to lean, and this is a long-term look for Nebraska football, not quick fix, but long-term look, who's going to give you the best chance to win right now? I think from a tool standpoint, the run, the pass, it's Adrian. From a who, and I think both guys have respect and command of that locker room. I think there's a lot of love and respect, and guys really like Jebbia. I mean, they love him. They love his work ethic. They love what type of leader he is. I think guys also feel pretty comfortable about Adrian, about what he's been able to do, and by the way, what he showed. It's one thing to kind of from afar see some 18-year-old come in that's an early enrollee, but you saw, I believe, a kind of coming out performance with that spring game in that situation with that crowd size, with everybody buzzing about this new true freshman quarterback, and he delivered on a pretty big stage that, yes, it's a practice. He did that. He came in. He did that. That has to wow and impress some of your teammates to go, there's not a bad choice here, A or B.
Yeah, I think regardless, he's going to be playing in those first few games, like you mentioned, against Akron. Because of this, now especially, they'll see how comfortable he is and how he can face against this tougher competition compared to 2 years ago when he was a junior in high school.
Well, both guys are going to have to get hit too.
Sure.
I mean, you'll see that
exactly
in the zone read option. The other rule that was passed today by the NCAA, it's the permission to contact process by the NCAA. Starting October, student athletes will have the ability to transfer to a different school and receive a scholarship without asking their current school for permission. What's that mean? Nick Saban, I don't want to play backup guard for you this year. I want to leave. Well, sorry, son, you can't transfer, and you can't transfer to Tennessee, and you can't transfer to Auburn. Just a recent example. Kids now just declare, tell their coach, I'm out, I'm done, see ya, and I'm leaving. And you can't stop me, and you can't block me. You can't block me within the conference. You can't block me to a team we're playing in the non-conference. You can't block me to a rival. I'm out. Colleges have two business days to put these transfers on a database, notifying college football of the transfer. Here's my problem, and we'll talk to Barry Alvarez about this. It kind of comes down into who you're recruiting, okay? Transfers are going to happen. There's a log jam at a lot of spots. Everybody wants the football. I think what Scott Frost and his staff are doing, they're going after kids that they see a really high ceiling on, and Coach Chenander made that point this week about Midwest and Nebraska kids having a higher ceiling than some out-of-state kids, being able to mold, develop, and then get them to be leaving as a five-star, four-star, and coming in as a two- or a three-star. The problem I have with this transfer thing is kids now just can walk. And it's not like a coach is trying to be a dirtbag by blocking a transfer. Sometimes yes, sometimes no, and then there's gray area. There's case by case. There needs to be a point in this transfer-happy culture and climate where a kid is told no. Here's why. Keep sticking it out. Keep grinding it out. You're not ready. It's not that we don't like you or don't think you're talented. You're just not ready. And instead of the answer being, I'm just going to take my ball and leave and the grass is greener and I'm going to go play somewhere else, It's not the case. Someday you'll play, but right now you're not ready. And it's just one more situation where coaches don't have control anymore. Now, there's a lot of coaches that abuse that power. There's a lot of conferences that abuse that power, and I'm talking SEC. It's not like they want to get a kid and play him. They will, yes. But a lot of times in the SEC and other conferences, they just want to keep another team from getting said kid. It's not like you'll play at Alabama, but they don't want Auburn to have him, as an example. So there's that situation that's gone on for years at college football. I'm fine with the NCAA allowing this. It's more rights for the athlete. It keeps things from an amateur standpoint. I guess the happiness continues. There's more rights for the athlete, which is fine. Kids need to have fun and go to school and play ball. I get that. But I don't like how things just, if they're not working out, they transfer. And I think Nebraska's doing a good job of finding kids that understand that they need development. They'll work hard before they think to leave first. Everyone goes through the fact of life of contemplating quitting something. I get that. But this makes it a little bit easier versus trying to make the kid better and the kid finally growing up maturity-wise and understanding, yeah, I wasn't ready to start at quarterback when I was 18. We'll talk with Derek Peterson. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
A little less than an hour away, Barry Alvarez with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke. And welcome in with HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Incredible work with this year's yearbook of Hail Varsity Magazine, your college football Bible. And Dr. Petey15 is where you follow him. And you read him with HailVarsity.com. Derek Peterson back with this. Derek, how are you, sir?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Doing all right. There's so much to get into. Danny and I just talked about something that's supposed to be boring, NCAA rules, but it was pretty effective and interesting to see how it applies to Nebraska when it comes to transfers and red shirts. I want to start off, though, with what's been going on with Hail Varsity's coverage of the Husker Nation Tour the last couple of days, and just kind of get your feedback, your takeaways from where you were at, and then some of the other staff members, of course, Jacob and Greg covering the events, too. Awesome work, guys, by the way, but just what were some of your main takeaways from the last couple of days?
One of the first things that jumps to mind, just in kind of seeing the questions that were asked and the reactions that maybe people had on social media to some of the more interesting quotes. You know, like you get those quotes and you're like, oh, man, I'm going to tweet this out, and then people are going to gobble this up. There's a lot. I'm getting the sentiment that people are ready for football, that mm-hmm. people are kind of tired of talking a little bit. They're ready to see things get proven on the field. And I think that's really interesting. I think that's I guess, a product of how much coverage this team gets in the offseason. But I also think it's interesting from the standpoint of, you know, I think these coaches are saying, they're not saying anything that they don't believe in. I don't think they're saying anything that they're, you know, walking up to the microphone and being like, watch this, I'm going to say this, and crowd's going to go wild. I think they're saying things that they have a track record of proving. I wrote this in a piece the other day, or yesterday, I think, that Greg Austin was talking about the offensive line and saying that they've got guys on the roster right now that can play at the level of some of the best in the country. And I think when he says that, I don't think he's saying that just to score brownie points with people. Because I think this staff is very aware of the fact that people have been hearing pretty heavy promises for, you know, however long now in the offseason, then those promises get broken when the actual hitting starts. But it's interesting to see how things have changed a little bit from the spring. I think I am definitely ready for football to start, so I get that sentiment. I'm rambling.
No, you're good. And I think we're all ready for football, and it's mid-June right now. A couple of things that were out there, and the things that I read yesterday and that pretty much wowed me, but I liked was Coach Fisher and his real talk with the crowds about where his incumbent cornerbacks are and the challenge mm-hmm. he has to them and what he's expecting from the new guys. And he wants guys to step up, either win the job or watch is the paraphrase. But what was your reaction to Fisher's comments?
Yeah, I think they're great. One of the things, like Fisher and Chenander both have been guys that haven't been afraid to kind of say it like it is ever since they got here. And I love that. I love that. I don't want just coach speak. I want to hear how they're actually doing. And I think when you start calling guys out in public, I think it can have, I mean, you can, there's obviously risk to it, but I think it can have a positive effect. I think it was BC that tweeted out that Fisher said something to the effect of when they arrived, guys were at 30%. Now they're at 70% of being where they need to be for this team to play at a really high level. Greg Austin, when I was listening to him in Gretna, he said something similar, that there was a lack of accountability when he got here, both on and off the field. And so to hear Fisher kind of – and guys have – I mean, Fisher and Chenander both have not been shy of calling out Lamar Jackson specifically. And I think – like, I like that. I think it's good. And one of the other things I'm looking at Jacob's piece right now, and there's a quote in there from Chenander where he says bad teams have zero leadership. Good teams are usually led by the coaches. Great teams are led by the players. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that this entire staff believes. I think that's Austin said something about the Unity Council coming back in the fall, as early as the fall. And I think that they are trying to push the right buttons. I think it was Fisher that said that. They're bringing in guys that are going to take positions and take jobs from guys that are already on the team. They're saying things publicly that are trying to motivate guys. They're trying to push all of those buttons to get this team to where it needs to be, and to show these, I think to show these guys that, you know, you shouldn't have gone 4-8 last year. So I love hearing comments like what Fisher said yesterday and like what Chenander says.
Derek, we hit on it last segment, Schmitty and I did, but the recent rule that in the NCAA allows redshirt football players to play up to 4 games in a season. First, I just want to get your reaction from that, and second, we kind of got into it as well. Do you think this will cause any major changes in the quarterback battle for the Huskers?
That's a good question. I love the rule change. And from what I've seen on Twitter and from what I've been seeing from coaches around the country, they love it as well. It makes sense. You know, you get a situation like what we had with Trey Bryant last year. If this rule was in place, there wouldn't be the, oh, we need to apply for a medical red shirt, wait to hear back. It would be, yeah, he's going to get that year back. I think it just makes sense and it kind of evens things out and makes it a little fairer playing field for guys that begin the season and then suffer injury and then lose that season. Or guys like Greg Smith brought up a really good point. What if, say, Cam Jurgens isn't ready to go at the beginning of the season? Is he still rehabbing from that injury? But he's ready later in the year. You can get him in, get him some snaps, get his feet wet without him losing that year. And then he's still got a full 4 years. I think it's a really, really smart decision on the NCAA's part. As it relates to Nebraska's quarterback situation, I'm really curious to see how coaches are going to strategize with this new rule change, because I think there's a bunch of different ways you can handle it. Maybe now, I don't know, maybe now Jebbia becomes the favorite to start, and then you go through the season, and if, I don't know, if things don't go according to plan, maybe you get Martinez in there for the last 4 games, and without, you know, losing his 4 years of eligibility. I think it opens up a ton of possibilities for them moving forward to have some strategy with this, because one of the things that I found interesting about the rule is there's no, you know, like you can play 2 games here and then you can play 2 games later. Like mm-hmm. there's no, you don't have to play it, you know, 4 at the beginning of the season or like the last 4 or any 4 game stretch. It's just 4 games. I think it's about time that something like this happened.
You could sprinkle them in. I mean, theoretically, yeah. You can see Jebbia and Adrian in the opener. Maybe you see him against Colorado. I mean, and this is just spitball here because coaches are like, no, we're going to have one quarterback and he's going to be our guy, because when you don't have one, you have none. And then the bowl game or end of the year. I mean, Frost's comments on this, I mean, it helps your roster. And when you get hit by injuries, because it's going to happen, you can turn to a guy and he can do spot duty for you if he's ready. But it'll also amp up guys instead of knowing that, all right, man, I'm just scout teaming it this year and I won't get a play. I got to kind of pay my dues here. They can still pay dues, but have the hope of seeing the field four times and still have 4 years to go. So that's what's great. From a transfer standpoint, do you like the rule that's going to take effect in October, permission to contact process? That means kids can just tell schools, look, I'm out, and two business days to put their name and notification up on a database. There's going to be a little more stringent rules, I just found out, within interconference transfer. But overall, do you like this? I don't like transfer options. I don't like that kids just kind of quitting and leaving. And I know that's the entitled take on this. There's a lot of situations where kids should be able to and need to be able to move on. But that small percentage of kids that don't get their way and move on, that's what I'm against. Some of those kids need to take the tough love and realize they're not ready, and the coaches know best.
Yeah, I think you're going to get those situations, but I don't think you should build an entire rule around, you know, a handful of situations like that occur each season. I like the rule change. I think naturally the next progression is going to be, okay, let's look at the year off, the wait year from transferring. I think that probably would have to come up next under discussion, I would think. I look at it, and where it's going to help guys is in a case like Noah Vedral, transferring back to Nebraska from Central Florida. I mean, it was an obvious move whenever Scott left. He's from Nebraska. He wanted to go play with Scott, and now Scott's going back to Nebraska, and then Central Florida blocked it. And I don't...
We never got a reason.
I didn't like that at the time. Yeah, I didn't like that at the time. I still don't like it. Vedral had to pay his way that first semester before he could go on scholarship, just for what seemed like petty reasons on the part of the team that he was leaving. And with this rule in place, a situation like that won't happen again. You know, what happens if there is a guy that's in Vedral's situation like that can't afford to pay his way for however long he was going to need to? This is going to help those guys. And I, you know, everybody says commit to the school, don't commit to the coach. Guys, commit to the coach. I mean, it happens. You build relationships with people in the recruiting trail, and you commit to those relationships. So I like this. I think it's good. I think there's not going to be a way to get around the, oh, I wanted to start, I don't get to start, okay, let's sit out and transfer. But I think this helps all of the other cases that are kind of in between that don't get as much publicity, maybe.
Derek, 30 seconds. What's your favorite part of the yearbook folks are going to see?
Brandon Vogel's story on Mario Verduzco is tremendous. Very excited for people to read that.
I can't wait to see it either. Great cover, amazing work. And 15 seconds, what did you feature in the yearbook?
I did possession and 10 data. Looked at 3 years of Nebraska, 3 years of Central Florida under Frost, and 3 years of Oregon with Frost there as the offensive coordinator.
Can't wait.
A little bit of what they've been, what they were with Frost, what they could be.
Love the projection. Read him with HaleVarsity.com. Derek Peterson at Dr. PD15. Derek, awesome work. Thanks for the time, man. We'll get caught up soon.
Thanks, bud. Enjoyed it.
Take care. There he is. Derek Peterson, Dr. Petey at Dr. PD15. HaleVarsity.com and magazines. Derek Peterson. We'll talk black shirts. We'll talk moose. And putting your phone down, that's on the way with Hale Varsity.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HaleVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago. Danny Burke, thanks to Derek Peterson. We're trying to run Shuey down. Mike Shuhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Barry Alvarez is coming up in 20 minutes. We'll get caught up with the head badger. And time for a little Wilderness Ridge Golf segment with Mike Shuhart, WildernessRidgeGolf.com. Take Dad to Wilderness Ridge for Father's Day brunch and enjoy a cocktail. If you are a dad, watching a little U.S. Open, membership benefits, membership pricing is there. Free lessons, a chance to get locked in on that with Mike Shuhart and, of course, Chris Thompson. Great staff at Wilderness Ridge. And it's time now. Gorgeous day to go play golf. WildernessRidgeGolf.com, 402-434-5106. Shuey, what do you know, brother?
Just out here living the dream, man. It's beautiful out.
I know. It's like 80 and sunny and... Shuey's like, yeah, it's got to be a phone day on Wednesday. I'm like, hey, I'll take Shuey anytime I can get Shuey. So I'm glad you're enjoying the weather. I'm glad you're helping folks work their golf game. Explain to folks real quick, when I say free golf lessons, that's impressive. Tell me just how impressive it is.
You can't beat free, can you? That's pretty awesome. So we have a bunch of our golf pros out here. We have some interns that work in the PGM program.
Okay.
That are studying to be golf professionals, and they're interning. So we have a sign-up sheet. You call in, and they all have times that are available. So if whatever works for your schedule, our golf pros will make it work for you. You come out, they watch you for 15 minutes, give you some good pointers on how to help your game get a little bit better.
That is tremendous. Let's talk some U.S. Open. Shuey, you've played at Shinnecock, and just how rough is that rough, brother?
It is rough, man. That course is brutal. You know, it's not like your traditional course, like around here, that you would see tree-lined and this and that. It's kind of a link style, but the meat of the golf course is the greens, man. They are diabolical. They're tiny, with a lot of undulation, a lot of fall-offs, false fronts, they call them, and side. And your hitting area to hit into some of those greens are just not very big.
Mm. Did you row up, grab a yacht, or did you fight the traffic when you went to the Open?
Unfortunately, I don't have the means for a yacht or a helicopter, so I had to fight the traffic. And it's brutal, man. Like I said, there's only one way in. Man, that road will get... I mean, you'll be there for 3 hours on it.
Mm.
It's crazy.
Okay, so you've played in the U.S. Open a couple of times. What should the Open be when it comes to the result you get after swinging? What's the expectation as a pro?
It is a true test of your overall skills, period. Because you're going to have to be able to do everything. You got to drive the ball really well because the fairways are pretty narrow. You know, a typical fairway that we play Sunday afternoon golf on is 40 yards wide. Those fairways are 20 to 25 yards wide.
Mm.
And then the rough is, they grow the rough up. So if you miss it too far offline, you are lucky if you find your ball, first of all. And then if you find it, good luck hitting it out of there. So... it demands your accuracy off the tee. The greens are going to be, like I said, small. Where they put the pins, you have very small areas to actually be able to get the ball into a position where you can do something with it. So if you don't, then it's going to test your short game. So how good is your short game? How good is your creativity around the greens? Hitting all kinds of different shots and short game shots. You'll see guys putting it from 20 yards off the green. The greens will be super hard and they'll be super fast, and the wind out there is going to play a huge factor, because a calm day out there is probably a 15 mile an hour wind.
Mm.
So you most likely in 4 days are going to get some 25 mile an hour wind days. So now, how good is your creativity? How good can you control the flight of your golf ball? Because the wind can wreak havoc on shots. So it's a true test of your whole golfing skills. Man, how do you drive it? How do you hit your iron shots? How do you chip and pitch the ball? How do you putt the ball? then how do you manage your emotions and stay very patient with yourself, staying committed to what you do for 72 holes? So, I mean, the guy that's on top of his game, that possesses the best of all of those, will come out on top. And that's why you'll see a lot of the big-name players. They'll be there in the end. Because they're seasoned at doing that. They know how to do that.
Mike Shewhart's with us, Wilderness Ridge Golf Segment, talking U.S. Open, Shinnecock, as it gets rolling tomorrow. And who performs better at this year's U.S. Open, Phil or Tiger?
Ooh. I kind of like Phil myself.
Okay.
I mean, Phil's played really good all year. Tiger's such a wild card, but Tiger's probably hitting the ball better than he has in a long time, but he's also putting worse than he has in a long time. So it's like you can't get away with not putting good. You have to putt good, period. And that's going to demand a lot of that. If Tiger can find his putting stroke within a week, which I highly doubt he will, but if he can putt just a little bit better, I mean, he'll be all right. But I think Phil probably will perform a little bit better. I don't anticipate either one of them being really kind of in the mix.
Sure. Whose A game's the best A game right now?
Dustin Johnson.
Okay.
Yeah, man, when that guy's on, he is just like he did last week. Man, mm-hmm. you don't win tour events by six shots, period. I mean, players are too good. He went out and just blew everybody away. It's crazy. The only thing Dustin lacks is he's not a great putter all the time, but he's a tremendous ball striker. He possesses every aspect of the game that you need. He's got power and accuracy. He's great with his irons. He's a great wedge player. He just doesn't putt super good all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So he's, and this golf course is a little different than some of the U.S. Opens because it's not a beast as far as length. So it's I think Corey Pavin has won there. The guys in past that have won there are not your bombers.
Mm.
They're very accurate, and the golf course isn't super long that they actually have a chance there because they're not back there hitting super long iron shots into this tall, small little green. Mm.
Shuey, I've got 30 seconds. Give me win, play, show for the U.S. Open 2018.
I like Ricky Fowler, John Rahm, and then one of the superstars like Rory McIlroy.
Okay, so you're saying Fowler, Rahm, and Rory.
Yeah.
Okay.
See how close I get.
Well, we'll bring it up next week, I promise you.
Yeah.
Go see Mike Shewhart. Go see the folks at Wilderness Ridge, Wilderness Ridge Golf Segment, wildernessridgegolf.com, 402-434-5106. Be a member today. Find out about those benefits. That'd be a great gift for Dad. How about a gift card? How about some shoes? How about some gear? How about a glove? Plenty of things for Father's Day with Wilderness Ridge. Should we be good, brother? We'll talk next week. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Always a pleasure.
Take care. Mike Shewhart, he is awesome. And he's played the U.S. Open many times. First, Barry Alvarez is 10 minutes away. I want to remind you about your friend at Sauter Heyman. Rick and the gang at Sauter Heyman. Rick can swing the clubs. He can also find you a pure-grown diamond that you love. Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds, Sauter Heyman. What are pure-grown diamonds? They're diamonds that are grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. They're beautiful. They have all the characteristics of earth-mined diamonds, but they're less expensive. 10 to 40%. Than traditional earth mine diamonds. They're 100% eco-friendly and sustainable, and you can go see just how beautiful pure-grown diamonds are today with Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman, 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion in Lincoln or out west in Grand Island, SauterHeyman.com. Okay, Danny Casino, Danny Burke, the Pride of Chicago. Let's talk odds as Vegas. See, do you have a friend in Rhode Island you've contacted?
No, not yet. I got to make some friends out there, though.
You got to get on. Do you bet golf?
Only in the big
tournaments. If you're desperate?
Not only the big majors. That's about it.
All right. Well, it's no shock that Dustin Johnson's the consensus to win, but Ricky Fowler's been bringing folks to the Vegas sports books. Here's what you got. DJ's 9-1 to win this week at Shinnecock Hills. Justin Rose, the second favorite, 12-1. Then you got Fowler, Rory, and Justin Thomas, all 14-1.
Where's my boy Spieth at?
I am scrolling. I don't have Tiger's at 20-1. Phil's 25-1. Jason Day's 15-1. Spieth and Rahm are 18-1. So think if Shuey would throw down a three golf parlay and hit with the odds.
That would be unbelievable.
That'd be astronomical.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I see you smiling. You're thinking about being the man that did that. Who you picking, who you taking, and who you putting your dinero on?
I don't know. I mean, I kind of like Spieth. Like, I wanted him to win the Masters, too, and I really thought he was going to win it on that last day. I just think he's
been putting like me, man.
Yeah.
He's in a funk.
Yeah. That's why I'm thinking he's due. And I don't know. I just kind of like him. He's the guy I look at who's like living the dream, you know? He graduates college, just goes straight to making millions and still really young. Like,
you know where he played.
Yeah, oh yeah. I know. Leaving that out, but I don't know. I'm going to ride with my boy Jordan still. What about you? Who you like?
No, I think I'm going to go with Ricky Fowler.
Okay.
I'm going to go with the people on this.
Ricky just got engaged, right?
I know.
Yeah, she's a good-looking gal.
Of course she is.
He's got confidence now, so it's not a bad pick.
I think Ricky Fowler has had confidence for a long time based on who's been on his arm.
Yeah, that's fair.
Just a guess. But all these young dudes that kind of pal around, they can handle it, and it's time for a breakthrough. Maybe it's Ricky's year. Good stuff from Mike Shuhart. Good stuff from Derek Peterson of Hail Varsity. We'll have blips on that on the ESPN 101.5 Twitter handle. We'll also get you some great audio tweeted out on the Hail Varsity Twitter handle. Podcast will be up here in a little bit as well with some of the one-on-one interviews. Barry Alvarez, head Badger, former Husker. A lot to get to with Barry and his Badgers. He is next, Barry Alvarez, when we come back. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. College Football Hall of Famer, longtime athletic director at Wisconsin, and former Husker Barry Alvarez back with us. Coach, how's your day going?
It's good. Been busy. Several meetings, but all good.
Well, I can imagine. I want to get your take on a couple of rules to start off that the NCAA came down with and get your reaction first. From a freshman football standpoint, four games are now allowed for freshman players to be involved in and not have it affect the redshirt season. What do you think of that rule?
I like it. I like that rule. I think it helps depth-wise. It helps prepare players. Sometimes you're a little thin, and, this allows you to bring some people up that can help you out through the season. But I think it's good.
The permission to contact process by the NCAA this October, student athletes will have the ability to transfer to a different school and receive that scholarship without asking the current school permission. 2 business days to put the player's name in a database. How do you feel about that rule?
You know, I haven't really had a chance to think about that a whole lot. I felt like if a student wants to leave, you know, the current school should then be able to, you know, use that scholarship elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I see that they did pass. If I just read correctly, I just walked out of a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
That they can transfer without permission.
Right.
Getting permission. I don't have any problem with that.
From a transfer standpoint, you want to keep athletes happy, but in the same sense, it doesn't hurt to stay and grind it out and and work for a spot too. There's a transfer epidemic in college athletics, and I'm sure it's, I don't know if it's been stressful for you, but it's probably taken some time of yours, hasn't it?
Not really.
No.
We've had some kids transfer, not many. We've had kids try to transfer in. That's part of doing business. I've always felt that, you know, keeping kids on campus and keeping them happy, that's a coach's job. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a coach's job of communicating with his athletes and letting them know what's expected of them, et cetera. But we haven't had much of an issue with transfers.
A few minutes, Barry Alvarez with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Coach, beginning of this week, it was the 8th anniversary of Nebraska joining the Big Ten. Does it feel like 8 years?
Well, it went fast. They've been a good member. I think it was a good move. I said when it happened, I'm happy for my alma mater because they landed in a very good conference, a very lucrative conference. Now, I believe they've got a full share of, you know, the TV money and the share of our profit sharing. And there are a lot of schools out there, a lot of conferences out there that aren't doing near as well as our league. So they landed in a very good spot. They've been a good addition to our league.
Coach, I want to get your thoughts on the black shirt tradition. Do you remember when you got your black shirt?
I do.
Can you take me through that?
Well, you know, I remember when it was how it all started. You know, most people don't know that. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Mike Corgan was in charge of equipment, mm-hmm. and he went down to the sporting goods store to get pullovers. And they had three colors, yellow, red, and black. And George Kelly chose the black ones for the starters, yellow ones for the second team, and red for the third team. And I believe that's how it all started. Mm-hmm. And it grew from there. But, it became a very good tradition, very proud tradition. And I know when I wore one, I felt an obligation and a responsibility when you wear it.
Coach, I want to stick with the defensive side of the ball. Wisconsin's been able to produce so many good linebackers. You've recruited well. You've developed well. What are some of the personality traits that kind of embodies a Wisconsin linebacker, in your opinion?
Well, it's not just a Wisconsin linebacker. Any, you know, good linebackers are players that love to play the game, players that naturally find the football and understand the game and can anticipate and study it. So through formations and tips from offenses, can anticipate where the ball is going to go and using alignment and those type things, put themselves in good position. But in the end, I've always said that a good linebacker is a guy, if you just scrimmage, no one knows anything, and you just play, at the end of the day, the guy that has most tackles is your linebacker. Somebody that just finds a way to get to the ball.
Coach, we've talked a lot when we've had a chance to chat about the walk-on program and how important and how necessary that is. And is it harder in today's day and age to get walk-ons than in past years? And Wisconsin's been very successful. Nebraska's had a history and a reputation of doing that as well. But is it each year, does it get more difficult to get a kid to walk on, even as good as Wisconsin's been?
I don't think so. You know, like Nebraska, we have one Division I football team in the state. You know, the kids want to play here. They want to play Division I football. They want to have a chance to go to bowl games, play on TV, play in front of big crowds, and play in a great league, and go to school here. So, you know, we really, it's just not whoever wants to show up, shows up, and walks on. We screen them, and we recruit them. We study them, and most of them are guys that, you know, it might be a little short or a step slow or haven't developed quite yet, but are good football players and tough guys, guys we've had in camp, and know that someday they have a chance to be a good football player. And then we recruit them, and we show them, and our history shows that they're going to be treated right. And, you know, the NC2A rules now allow them to eat on training table, which they wouldn't before. But, you know, I think our tradition and the fact that they know they're going to be treated fairly here and have a very good chance. And if they do well enough, get into the two deep, they're probably going to earn a scholarship. So, you know, we still, I think Paul will probably bring in around 20 every year. But they're guys that have been screened.
They are screened, and to be able to play Wisconsin's a pretty big deal. And last time we talked, you called the walk-on your eraser from a recruiting standpoint because the walk-on guy can step in and get developed and play at such a high level. A couple more minutes. Barry Alvarez with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, I saw a pretty fascinating stat this week during your time as head coach at Wisconsin. Teams the following week after playing Wisconsin, their record was 10-23. The physicality not only allowed Wisconsin to win head-to-head, but the following week, you guys beat teams up so bad they didn't recover. What were your practices like during the week from a physicality standpoint? I mean, how much hitting did you do?
Well, most of our hitting was done in what I call the inside drill. We used to go 20 minutes, and that'd be ones against one, twos against twos, inside drill, big tight end through the tackle, everybody there but the wide receivers, and we put the safeties in it, so it almost had your whole defense there, and we run our inside plays at the defense, and we didn't take the running backs to the ground, but the line play was live. Mm-hmm. And we did that on Tuesdays and Wednesdays every week. And then as we went along, we got a little softer. And instead of going 20 minutes, my coaches talked me into going just a number of plays. We might go one set of 10 plays for the off ones, 8 plays for the twos. Then the next set would be 8 and 6. But we were always going to get our inside drill in and try to stay sharp. And we'd go good against good.
Who sold you on it? How big a sell was it?
We didn't have to sell anybody on it. That's what we were going to do.
Okay.
And we did that at Notre Dame when I was at Notre Dame, and had a lot of success with it. You teach kids how to keep their feet. Nobody's on the ground. And teaches your defense how to stay on their feet, the offense how to stay on their feet, and it teaches you how to strain. So, you know, that's how you build a good, strong running game.
Coach, there's been an effort to get Coach Solich back to Nebraska to honor him by Coach Osborne and Coach Frost. And sounds like Coach Solich will be back for the Outland Award in January. What's your reaction to that? I know how close you are to Coach Solich.
Yeah, I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled, and I think it's a long time coming, and I'm really happy that he'll have a chance to get back there and maybe people in Nebraska show their appreciation for the good job that he's done. He did. As a matter of fact, he was supposed to be here tomorrow.
Okay.
We've got a function tomorrow night, and Rick Coleman, one of my old teammates from Texas, is coming up, and Bobby Sodden, one of my old college buddies from over in Lincoln's coming over, and Cindy and I are being honored for building a Gilda's house here, and Lou Holtz is coming in to speak, and Frank was going to come and then had a doctor's appointment that he couldn't get out of, so he had to back out at the last minute. But sorry, I won't be able to see him. But I'm very happy that he's coming back to Nebraska.
Coach, thought on Scott Frost from afar. Your reaction to how things are rolling with Scott back in Lincoln?
Well, you know, I think he's doing a nice job. I think he's rallying the troops. He's got the fans very positive, and they should be. You've got a guy that understands the system and lived it, grew up there, parents went to school there, was a successful player, and understands what Nebraska is all about. That's what I've tried to do here with a lot of our assistant coaches and many of our head coaches, bring guys back that are from here that understand our culture, and the place means something to them, and it perpetuates what we've believed in the past. And I think Scott has done that. And there's no question he's a very good coach and smart coach and creative. And he's got the facts and he's produced. He's done it already. So it'll just be a matter of time before he has his team and his system in place there in Lincoln.
Coach, what's Coach Bielema doing now, and what do you expect to see him doing in the future?
Yeah, Brett's working with New England. He's with the Patriots. He traveled with Belichick during the evaluation prior to the draft. I think he's going to be a consultant with them, learn the NFL. I think someplace go in. I'm sure next year be a full-time coach in that league, and whether he goes back to college or stays in the NFL, I don't know. That remains to be seen, but he'll stay in coaching.
And a last thought here, Sean Eichhorst is down in Texas. What's your thoughts on him heading down to Big 12 country?
Well, Sean's a good man, and I think that's a good break for him. That's an excellent university, and Del Conte's a good athletic director. He's going to give Sean a lot of responsibility, and they're revamping their whole program there, and Chris will give Sean a lot to do, and I told him that Sean would do a great job for him, so I'm happy for him and his family that they can get down there. Austin's a wonderful city to live in, too.
You're pretty excited about the upcoming schedule. Notre Dame on the schedule. You're at Lambeau, and then also Notre Dame and Soldier Field. And then you're also at Wrigley against Northwestern. You helped put those things together as AD. You're not a stranger to it when LSU came up to Lambeau a couple of years ago.
No, those are fun games. You know, we worked a long time to try to get Notre Dame on the schedule. We were trying to get a home and home for a long time, and this happened to work out with their Shamrock series, and we were able to put it together. I'm excited, and I think our fans are excited. The athletes will certainly be excited to play a team like Notre Dame. The only thing with those, and luckily in both cases, whether it be Lambeau or at Soldier Field, it's close for our fans, so they can get there. You know, you like to play them in our stadium or play home and home, but we just didn't have that opportunity. So it worked out best to do it this way. So, those games are fun to play in, especially when you win.
That's the key, isn't it? Get the win against the big non-conference. Coach, we'll get caught up again down the road. Always appreciate your time with us.
Okay, very good. Have a good day.
Ed Badger, Barry Alvarez, Hail Varsity Radio, and he is a big-time proponent of playing those big-time non-conference games. Wisconsin's been all about it recently. When you look at the game against Bama in Jerry World, they got one against LSU. Pretty impressive. And then you had kind of a turn of the corner by Wisconsin. They started winning some of those, and they've skyrocketed. They are the team to beat in the division, maybe the Big Ten this year. We love talking with Barry Alvarez. We covered a ton of stuff there. If you just caught part of it, we'll have that posted and podcasted for you. You can always log on HailVarsity.com or ESPN Lincoln or iTunes. Your friends from AgriGold want you to remember that those soybean signs you see in your neighbor's field this year, it's that AgriGold sign. Customers now have access to select soybean varieties direct to their farm. The AgriGold way, high expectations for every seed that goes into the ground, and the approach to soybeans no different. High-performance soybeans from a brand you already know. For more information, visit AgriGold.com. We'll spend a couple more minutes on the black shirt tradition. Nice to hear Barry Alvarez's thoughts about his when he got that black shirt in the 60s. So Coach Chenander, and he wants to make it mean something when you get that black shirt. We'll also talk about Bill Moose and putting the phone away. Can tap the line, Chilling Bridge, Cork and Tap House. Let's do that, 466-3776.
And we're back.
Fellas, I think we could listen to the radio.
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Okay, three questions for you. We'll answer. You can chime in, 800-825-5865-466-3776. You can tap the line, Chilling Bridge, Cork, and Tap House. Let's do that. How would you do the black shirts? I said yesterday, whatever Coach McBride says is gospel. And Coach Chenander is adamant that no one's earned one yet. Some of you are frustrated by that because you're supposed to hand them out before the year. So we'll get into that about 10 minutes here or so to chat about that. We'll dive into many things like engagement by fans. The Danny Burke, Pride of Chicago demographic. Bill Moose, as part of the Husker Nation tour, asked about fan engagement once the phone's put away. Be a 12th man. Make a difference at the stadium with your voice. Not that you're missing plays, staring down on your phone. Totally agree with that, but you got to give them something to cheer about. 56-14 has been the last couple of home games you played. You lost four straight. And when it comes to this red shirt rule that's been implemented by the NCAA, freshmen are going to be allowed to play four games, and not lose their red shirt eligibility. How does Nebraska handle the quarterback situation with that? Do you take the first four games and split things rep-wise between Jebbia and Martinez? Do you let Adrian, if he wins the job, start, and then if things sputter, you go to Tristan and you still redshirt Adrian? What are some moves you make with that? And I think you can be sporadic with it since you're not mandated to do it consecutively. I think it helps the player to get a couple of games consecutively under their belt, see the jump from game one to game two, or as they say in the season, you jump from game one to game three is the team you're going to be. See the player jump from game one to game three so you have a fourth out there dangling, maybe the bowl game. It's just hard to tell when it's real, when guys have to go in and it's 3rd and 8 against Colorado, or it's a 3rd and 5 against Michigan, or you're at the Horseshoe, or Wisconsin or Penn State or Michigan State's Memorial Stadium. There's so many different variables there, but I do believe that you're going to have a great, great option here with both your quarterbacks. You're going to name your starter eventually. And then if you want to see what a guy can do, mop-up time, live action, you sprinkle him in a series. And it's not just quarterback, but let's focus on that position because it's the position of intrigue for 2018. And visions of greatness dance through your head as a Nebraska fan with a dual-threat guy like Adrian and a gym rat with a good arm and just kind of a straight-up competitor like Jebbia. Man, this is good. This is great for Nebraska. It'll help, too, when it comes to injuries, when it comes to depth. And like Derek Peterson said in Hour 1, think about where Nebraska's at with Tre Bryant. Think about where they're at with Tre Bryant. They're applying for a medical now. If this rule was instituted a year ago, a year earlier, you don't have to worry about it because you could have used last year as a red shirt. As he goes for almost, what did he hit Oregon for? 100.5, 175, probably 80% of your rushing yards per carry total for the year last year. Danny, we talk about black shirts, and I'm going to be honest, man, I'm a little tired of the topic. I'm never tired of talking to Mr. Blackshirt Charlie McBride, but I'm tired of the uproar and the outrage. This is how it's been done. This is how it should always be done. Times change. Things change. And does anybody on the 2017 team that's returning, not named Luke Gifford, because he was injured for the last half, can't blame much on him, and when he was in, he was money. Still, he was pretty good. But if Chenander says no one's earned it, then you don't get it. Is that okay with you as a Nebraska fan if the new guy in charge who's touched base with Charlie McBride, who works for Scott Frost, who gets the black shirts, if he wants to make it mean something, restore it? Because when's the last time you've looked at a defense for Nebraska football and said, okay, yep, they're black shirts? I mean, you're going on 9 years. And you've had some okay defenses. I mean, Banker's defense his second year, they played well. They saved Nebraska a lot in the 9-4 season. Some of Bo's defenses early on were incredible. Some of the defenses Jay Moore was on were really good under Callahan. They were good. They were good defenses. They led the nation in sacks. Okay, I mean, despite who the head coach was, whether you liked them or not, they've been removed, and it's been 20 years since Coach McBride's here. As a family, as a unit, you're all black shirts. That's what Coach McBride says. But there's a standard of excellence to wear one in practice. You're a family. You're a group. You've got each other's back, but there's the creme de la creme. And I don't know that guys right now, especially those under Diaco, he talked a good game about it. They sure as hell didn't play like black shirts. And that's what Shenander wants these guys to understand. And he's got it from up on high about what the standard is and needs to be. Guys not wanting to hit. The tackling. The wilting. Getting run on for 300 plus yards. 7-8 yards off the wideout. Almost 7.5 a catch. Every time they threw the football against your secondary. I have no issue with this. And it's okay to change tradition for the right reason. And if guys aren't in the right mind frame of understanding what the meaning of it is, then they shouldn't just get it for showing up and winning the spot. That's what Shenander's trying to do. I hope it's understood.
Yeah, I'm perfectly okay with this, and I think most people that I at least would talk to or just getting a general sense of, I think they're okay with it too. I mean, it makes complete sense. If you're a new coaching staff, you're adopting this tradition, and that's fine. That's great. Everyone wants that. But like you said, he talked to Charlie McBride. He's got Frost at the helm. Nothing's going to go wrong with it. How can you appoint someone a black shirt, such a heavy tradition, without actually seeing anyone playing a game? You know what I mean? I think it's right to wait a little bit and do it right. You don't want to just give it out for the sake of giving it out, kind of like how it was under Diaco. I absolutely love the fact of earning it, really seeing who wants it and who can get it. I think after the first year, I could see it changing to maybe they'll give it to the veterans, the more experienced defensive players.
Guys who've played well.
Yeah, when it's their second year, though. But the first year as a coaching staff, you really need to establish who's going to be the leaders and who's going to deserve it. It's anybody's race. You know, anybody can get it. And that's what's the nice thing about getting a new coaching staff, because anyone can prove themselves. It's not just, these guys were the starters last year. You know, I guess we'll just give it to them. We'll just play it off. Let's just give it out just to give it out. No, I mean,
hey,
it's
I'm
right
not
that
from
they
Nebraska.
Can win it.
I'm now your defensive coordinator. This is what I'm supposed to do. Okay,
exactly.
Here you go.
It needs to be done right in the sense of giving it to the right players at the right time. They absolutely have to earn it, because that's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. So I have no problem with this.
Well, and the other part of it too is the numbers. There's been guys who have been pretty impactful role guys that you could say is a black shirt, even though they aren't a starter.
Yeah.
That varies. And when it comes to what McBride, and Charlie's talked about that with us, said to Shenander, you know, it started off as 11 starters, and it's not the number that's important. It's about deserving and earning. Who earns that black shirt? And those there were guys that were doing it the right way, and it's on the field and off the field. And there can be 11, 12, 14. It just varies. There could be a year where you have 14 dudes, your 11 starters, and your specialty guys, your nickel, your dime, your pass rush specialist. There could be a year where just four guys get them. Mm-hmm. And you got to prove it in practice every day. As Coach Shenander said, rents do every day. I love that comment. I want to get a T-shirt that says that. The rents do every day. So that's where Shenander's coming from. And I applaud him for it. 466-377-6800-825-5865. Bill Moose and some of his comments. I love listening to Bill Moose. I love hearing what he has to say about things. He's feeling good right now, and he should, man. He got Scott Frost here. He's been out glad-handing and kind of firing up the crowd. is very confident with his comments on Oklahoma. Responded a bit to his Ohio State comments. Got a little bit of trouble there. Okay. Here's the question I asked you, recent Nebraska graduate. You'll be getting the phone call or the little card in the mail someday soon. Donate. Be a Husker season ticket holder. Danny Burke, Fortune 500, Forbes Man of the Year. When it comes to Nebraska football games, the next generation of Husker fans, Moose's challenge to current students with their presence at games. Can it swing a game? Bill Moose believes so. Can swing a win or two per season. And Moose's quote, put the phone in your pocket and be engaged. When you got on, when you weren't calling games for the mighty KRNU, when you weren't doing work for the Big Ten Network Plus, Danny, mm-hmm. were you on your phone during a Nebraska game in the stands because of the score or because you wanted to film a touchdown play and tweet it out?
Well, first of all, if you're on your phone to try to get any sort of internet, it's just not going to happen. So I don't understand.
Even with
that
the upgrades?
Aspect. I mean, maybe the upgrades helped a little bit, but originally when I got there, it was brutal. But the only time I would be on is, you know, you got to do the
Snapchat.
You got to
put a bet in.
Well, that too.
Danny's putting a bet in from South Stadium. I get Georgia Tech -8. Done. It's a lock.
What everyone does, you got to put on the story. Just let all your friends know you're there. That's what everyone will do. But I get that. But after that, there's no point of being on your
phone.
Watch
the game.
Exactly.
And if you
That's
can't
why
watch anymore, go drink more beer.
There you go. So, no, get off your phone. I get it. And I do think it can make an impact, too. So I like the challenge.
Be the 12th man. All right. A jock doc on the way. LeBron's broken hand. How bad is it? Dr. Doug will tell us. Hail Varsity continues on a Wednesday, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Doug Tavis with us. Dr. Doug, how are you?
Getting through another day, Chris, yourself?
Doing the same. Dr. Doug, you ever hurt your right hand in the NBA Finals?
Personally, I haven't experienced it, but I hear it happened.
I hear it happens, and man, there's so much frustration to go around after that game one debacle. The word out that in frustration, the whiteboard took the brunt of LeBron's frustration, and let's talk about the right hand of LeBron. Dr. Doug, you've been around a lot of pro athletes. You've been around some tough locker rooms after big games. And what's your reaction to this before we get into the injury?
Well, you see it happen actually fairly frequently. It's called a boxer's fracture, and I'm sure that's what he's got. I haven't seen any x-rays, of course. But, guys get pissed off after the games, and boom, it's right into the nearest locker, or in this case, a whiteboard. And it's one of those things that's unfortunate, but the reason athletes are competing at that level of competitiveness is because they're very competitive people, and their emotions get the best of them, and these kind of things happen.
Well, when you look at it, James's injury is being called a deep bone contusion, more so than a full break, soft cast, self-inflicted. That was after the 51.8 rebound, 8 assist night. And you have self-inflicted issues from time to time. Tell me about this fracture, this issue, this injury, Dr. Doug, and how common it is.
Yeah, well, so, when we use the term contusion, or bone contusion, what we're talking about is bleeding inside of the bone. And what that is the softer bone internally actually does have fracturing within it. So if you look at it under a microscope, you actually see where the crystals of the bone are broken. The external bone, the harder bone around the outside, sometimes may not, or it might get a little crack in it or something like that. So it's a continuum of the same problem, and I think LeBron said, I pretty much had a broken bone. Well, it might have been his way of just saying, you know, it didn't break all the way through, you know, but, and the reality of it is, you know, those things hurt just as bad as a broken bone. I LeBron's an amazing athlete, and for him to continue to play through that, even if it was more of a bone contusion than a you know, full bone fracture, is pretty amazing.
He wasn't at full health. He was still that good. And I don't have a shot chart, but I don't know that he was on fire or even took as many mid-range to three-point shots games two through four as he was able to do in game one. This clearly affected the type of shot he could take, but what's your analysis on the effect overall? He still did what he did, still averaged what he averaged.
Yeah, I mean, it's when you think about the force that would be put onto your hand when you've got to make that NBA three, you know, type of a shot, the ball rolling off of the fingers, hyperextending the fingers, would put a lot of pressure again against that area. And whether that's, you know, whether that's crack through the bone or deep contusion, either way, it would be really hard to have that perfect hand-eye, you know, finesse coordination that's required to make that shot. So you're probably right, and I would agree with you. I don't know what the, you know, what all the shot distribution was, but you're probably right. He probably found himself moving towards the basket a lot closer, you know, with everything that he was trying to do in those final games, and you know, try and limit the amount of exposure his hand was feeling.
From a gamesmanship standpoint, what do you make of him showing up to the podium after they've been swept in a cast?
Well, yeah, I suspect what was happening was that he was probably being splinted in between, you know, the games anyway, and that he would put that on after he gets done with his press conference. And then finally, you know, if you look at the pictures, games, you know, three and four, you look at the pictures of the guy's hands, you know, that are on the internet, I mean, he's very swollen. So if I'm, you know, the treating physician, the series is over, you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, it's about time, let's get this thing casted up so that you can, you know, be without having the pain that you've been having. Casts are amazingly helpful in reducing pain. So I think that was a pretty good idea by the team physician.
Could he have played with a cast?
Not really. You know, you just really can't control the basketball adequately, you know, with that. You can play with some degree of appliance to your extremities, but it can't be harmful to the other players. And in basketball, they really can't pad those things up like they do in football. Mm.
Dr. Doug Davis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking LeBron and the broken hand. Okay, so what's next for LeBron? What's the timetable with this injury, and is there any potential for long-term effects with it?
Yeah, so if he's not having a surgical intervention, you know, then that means if it's a fracture, it isn't displaced enough to worry about surgery. The metacarpals, which are the hand bones where his swelling is most obvious, those heal relatively quickly. So I usually would only cast for about 3 weeks. And long term, I wouldn't anticipate anything at all.
Okay. This isn't something that you can re-injure or break. I mean, you can punch another whiteboard, I'm sure.
Oh,
but,
sure. Yeah.
But is it more likely to get re-injured because it's been injured before?
No, not at all. I think once he just gets over this, he'll be just fine. And he's probably going to take a little time off now after this shellacking. And he probably didn't even want to look at a basketball.
Well, think if he would have pulled off a game two, three, or four win with just one hand.
Oh,
he's already carrying four other dudes.
Yeah, exactly.
Dr. Doug Davis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. Dr. Doug, we'll get out of here on this. And do you remember an incident like this that you witnessed or saw? You don't have to name guys in the pro leagues, but what's the most, what's the biggest meltdown you've seen, I guess?
Oh, I've seen some windows broken. I've seen guys having to get stitched up after games over that kind of stuff.
Windows?
It can get pretty irate. You're right. It's probably one of those things where you're not going to tell any secrets.
You've seen it, you've dealt with it, and you've treated the athlete, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Jock Doc Wednesday, Dr. Doug Tavis talking LeBron and that broken hand. Dr. Doug, thanks for the insight on this. We'll get caught up again.
Thanks, Chris. Keep it cool.
Thanks, Dr. Doug and LeBron. Don't text, don't drive, don't ever do it. It increases your crash risk 23 times, and it's like driving blind at 55 miles per hour. The length of a football field. 5 seconds, your eyes off the road, could be deadly. This message on texting and driving from the Nebraska Department of Transportation and Highway Safety Office.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Just in front of top of the hour, great to be back with you. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Loaded show today. Mike Shewhart has played the U.S. Open, has been part of Shinnecock. He gave us who he thinks can get it done. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment was good stuff. As always, from Shuey, Derek Peterson, Dr. Pedia, Hail Varsity, recap the Husker Nation tour he was a part of. And how about Barry Alvarez? Caught up with the head badger a little bit less than an hour ago. Can email us, chris@halevarsity.com. Can tweet at us and follow @Schmidt_radio, @DannyBurke5, and, of course, @HaleVarsity. One last note on this Husker Nation tour and some of Greg Austin's comments, and Derek touched on them. But Colt Conrad, you had Coach Austin asked about, you know, what's Nebraska going to do at center? Well, Coach Austin said that, you know, the loss of Decker really wasn't that big because he was injured. He wasn't here to be a part of spring anyway and do the snaps and get the scheme down. But I do believe that Austin, is a quote from him, you can read HaleVarsity.com, we have to play the guys that are here, and one of those guys that is here is Colt Conrad. We're fortunate to have him. He did some things for us this spring. So, hey, Colt Conrad. You've seen him. He just continues to grind. I liked him at right tackle. Things didn't go well for him at center, but I think this offense can maybe use a little bit more of his skill set. The tempo, the tenacity, the ferocity. He's an in-state kid. He wants to win bad. He didn't like being a part of a Nebraska team that was 4-8. That simple. That simple. Good group. A lot of praise for this offensive line from Austin, but he spends most of his time being pretty demanding and pretty real with them. And if he says that you got some all-conference or award-winning caliber linemen on this squad, it's his job to get that play out of them, and you haven't seen that for a while. So we'll get caught up tomorrow at 4 with Hail Varsity. We'll talk some recruiting right in front of Friday Night Lights with Greg Smith. We are out to one NFL dude. Maybe we'll hear from another. Maybe a Big Ten Network friend will stop by. We'll probably have to talk a little bit about Marty Smith and Scott Frost. Is that tomorrow night?
I think it might be tonight.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to have to pretend I could make it through 20 miles camp of hiking. That might work me. You ever gone hiking?
Not like anything serious.
Like intentionally?
I haven't prepared, packed a backpack and let's go.
40 pounds of gear, canteen.
No, I haven't done that. Just gone up in
stick.
Boulder and stuff, drive your car up,
you
walk
hippie.
Out.
All those
you had to get the view.
All those goofball parents that ruined our Sunday were from Boulder. All these stupid buff.
So now there is a rivalry for you for Colorado.
Oh,
don't tell Bill Dolman, though. He'll get pissed.
Not well. Yeah, you might.
He got mad at us the last time we brought it up, Colton and I. Now we just bring it up every time on purpose.
Hey, Bill, what do you think of Colorado and Nebraska, the rivalry?
Exactly. Oh, he'll go off.
Ask him about 1991, if he can still thaw out his big toe from that game. Talk to you tomorrow at 4 with Hail Varsity. Thanks.